Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a very good morning to you from Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, this 31st day of October 2005, and we welcome you to the show today. Glad you've joined us. We're going to have an exciting day on tap here as we get to talk about Bush's new nominee, Alito. But at any rate, before we do so, we need to, we're going to check the weather in just a second. You know, Bush has been nominating just bonehead, seems like, candidates like cronies, like Myers and so forth. And we aren't very pleased with Justice John Roberts. Somehow, apparently, I missed a story. Somebody told me that John Roberts, in his first vote on the Supreme Court, voted for abortion. Now, I remember the case where the woman was in prison and wanted to get an abortion there, and it was permitted at some point. But I didn't remember him voting specifically for abortion, so I don't know how that one's got by me. But apparently, that was indeed the case, what happened. So we're sad to hear that, but we're not surprised. But this new nominee might be something entirely different. There's a guy that Bush is going to be nominating named Samuel Alito. We're far more optimistic about this, and it seems like he's succumbing to the pressure from true conservative people. We'll find out, though. Anything Bush does is doubtful to me, but we're going to give the guy a credit where credit is due, if indeed this Alito guy is well worth praising. At any rate, before we go on, we want to check the weather in case some of you are getting on the way out the door here for work.
Right now, Greenville Spartanburg is 45 degrees, downtown 43 degrees, Anderson 37 degrees, Clemson 43 degrees too. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s, light and variable winds becoming south around 5 miles per hour this afternoon. And here's a quote by David Friedman: "Ask not what your government can do for you, but ask what your government is doing to you."
Yes, indeed. Isn't that something that we need to do? What is our government doing to us? Well, I'll tell you what, David Friedman, we like reading him. He's a libertarian. I think he's more or less an anarchist, not in the sense of being someone who wants chaos, social chaos in society, but a person who believes that the state can never do any good, and even limited government is impossible to maintain, and therefore the best role or best thing we could have in society is no parasite at all, no limited government at all. He wrote a book called The Machinery of Freedom. Interesting book, worth reading, even if you end up disagreeing with him, as I do, on the ability to have the limited government basically envisioned by our founders. He still has many good critiques and so forth, and also shows how it is possible for anarchy to work. Yes, indeed, anarchy can be a feasible way that society is organized. It's incomprehensible to many people, but he shows that it worked in Iceland and other places. Doesn't mean it could always work, but it is at least feasible at some point. One thing he doesn't deal with well is how anarchy is a disequilibrating point, which means that as soon as it occurs in history, there is a tendency for it almost immediately to go toward a state or towards government instead. And this doesn't stop there. That criticism could also be leveled against us who love and admire the founders of this country and limited constitutional government, because we see that even limited constitutional government is a disequilibrium position. People prefer states. People tend to gravitate towards states, just as they did in 1 Samuel chapter 8, and begging Samuel for a king that they could be like the other nations. Why is it that people prefer slavery, tyranny, oppression, and so forth? It's part of the sinful nature of men, folks. Not only the people that run for office, or not run for office, just take power, but also in the hearts of those who are seeking power for themselves. And it's sad. It's a sad commentary on human nature that people love states, even though they're so dreadful for human beings. Anyway, here is the Fox News headline, the breaking news: Bush to nominate Samuel Alito for the Supreme Court. Washington President Bush, stung by the rejection of his first choice, will nominate Samuel Alito to the Supreme Court, selecting a conservative federal judge to replace retiring Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, a moderate. The choice, confirmed by two senior Republican officials, was likely to spark a political brawl. Unlike the nomination of Harriet Myers, which was derailed by Bush's conservative allies, Alito will face opposition from liberal Democrats. Bush planned to announce the nomination at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The White House hopes the choice mends a rift in the Republican Party caused by his failed nomination of Myers and puts his embattled presidency on a path to political recovery. Democrats already put the White House on notice that a conservative judge such as Alito would create problems. So consistently conservative, Alito has been dubbed Scalito or Scalia-lite by some lawyers because of his judicial philosophy invites comparisons to conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. But while Scalia is outspoken and is known to badger lawyers, Alito is polite and reserved and even-tempered. Myers bowed out last Thursday after 3 weeks of bruising criticism from members of Bush's own party who argued the Texas lawyer and loyal Bush confidant had thin credentials on constitutional law and no proven record as a judicial conservative. The officials speaking on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to preview Bush's remarks said Alito was virtually certain to get the nod for the moment Myers backed out. The 55-year-old jurist was Bush's favorite choice of the judges in the last set of deliberations, but he settled instead on someone outside of what he calls the judicial monastery, the official said. Bush believes that Alito not only has not only the right experience and conservative ideology for the job, but he also has a temperament suited to building a consensus on the court. A former prosecutor, Alito has experience in the bench that factored into Bush's thinking, officials said. Judge Alito has a strong judicial track record, said Republican consultant Greg Mueller, who works closely with conservative activists. He has more experience than many who have come to the court. While Alito is expected to win praise from Bush allies on the right, Democrats have served notice that his nomination would spark a partisan brawl. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, said Sunday that Alito's nomination would create a lot of problems. Unlike Myers, who has never been a judge, Alito, a jurist from New Jersey, has been a strong conservative voice on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals since Bush's father, former President George H.W. Bush, seated him there in 1990. With an embarrassing withdrawal of Myers' nomination last week, the rising death toll in Iraq and Friday's indictment of top vice presidential aide I. Lewis Scooter Libby, Bush's approval ratings are at the lowest ebb of his presidency. Polls show Democrats and most independents don't approve of his job performance, leaving the conservative wing of his party the only thing keeping Bush afloat politically. Judicial conservatives praise Alito's 15 years on the Philadelphia-based court, a tenure that gives him a more appellate experience than almost any previous Supreme Court nominee. They say his record shows a commitment to a strict interpretation of the Constitution, ensuring that the separation of powers and checks and balances are respected and enforced. They also contend that Alito has been a powerful voice for the First Amendment's guarantees of free speech and free exercise of religion. Liberal groups, on the other hand, note Alito's moniker and said his nomination raises troubling concerns, especially when it comes to his record on civil rights and reproductive rights. Alito is a frequent dissenter on the Third Circuit, one of the most liberal federal appellate benches in the nation. In the early 1990s, Alito was the lone dissenter in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, a case in which the Third Circuit struck down a Pennsylvania law that included a provision requiring women to seek abortions to notify their spouses. The Pennsylvania legislature could have rationally believed that some married women are initially inclined to obtain an abortion without their husband's knowledge because of perceived problems, such as economic constraints, future plans, or their husband's previously expressed opposition that may be obviated by discussion prior to the abortion, Alito wrote. The case ended up at the Supreme Court, where the justices in a 6-3 decision struck down the spousal notification provision of the law. The late Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist cited Alito's reasoning in his own dissent. Alito, an Italian-American who grew up in Trenton, New Jersey, has a resume filled with stepping stones to the high court. He was educated at Princeton University, earned a law degree from Yale University, the president's alma mater. Uh-oh. Does that mean he's Skull and Bones, by the way? Well, I guess somebody will have to fill us in on that. The nomination of Alito could end the intense speculation over who would replace O'Connor at a decisive swing vote in the host of affirmative action, abortion, campaign finance, discrimination, and death penalty cases. First picked John Roberts to replace O'Connor, but when Rehnquist died, the president quickly renominated Roberts for the top chair on the high court. After the Senate confirmed Roberts 78-22, Bush nominated Myers to replace O'Connor. She withdrew within a month. So there's the Fox News story in its entirety about Samuel Alito. Now the guessing game for the new court nominee is in full swing, and this is another Fox News story. It says, President Bush offered no insight and gave no comment about his next nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court as he entered the White House Sunday. Nevertheless, his expected afternoon return from Camp David renewed anxious expectations in Washington, D.C., that a new high court nominee could be named at any time. I think the first time it will be Michael, syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer said Sunday. This story is old. I thought we were reading something about Samuel. Oh, here you go. Here you go. Okay. He also likes Circuit Court Judge Sam Alito. So that's already been... Apparently, that was already in the thinking of folks here. Well, at any rate, we're going to find out. We're going to follow this story, of course, more as time goes on here. But for right now, we have Samuel Alito, apparently, as the Supreme Court nominee, will officially be made so here shortly. Now, we're very pleased if he's a pro-life judge to be on the court. We don't have much hope for saving the empire at all here. In fact, I have about zero hope. But on the other hand, I'd much rather see someone there with true credentials for promoting liberty and truth in the land than I would with any other. And so if George Bush has actually done a good thing by nominating another Scalia, then we're very pleased to see a strict constructionist, somebody who interprets the Constitution as it was intended by the founders, not according to some dynamic whim of interpretive light that comes to some of these justices these days, apparently. We'll be really happy if that's indeed the case, that he's that good of a guy. But time will tell. We'll see, to say the least. Okay, then. Well, we have just a couple minutes before our first break, but let's go ahead and give a couple of plugs, maybe. Well, maybe let's go ahead and read one or two more articles here before we go on. We have inspiration from a dying soldier. Inspiration from a dying soldier. This is from Gray Echoes. And, of course, this is our pro-Confederate group, which we like. A soldier wrote for the Southern Churchman the following. A guardian spirit passed through a group, whatever that is, through the group of soldiers who lay stretched on the ground, some exchanging together in broken converse such thoughts as their situation suggested, and some in the deep slumber of weariness, forgetting both danger and toil. Unchallenged by the watchful sentinel, he approached one manly form extended on the ground and gazed with interest on sunburnt features and the thoughtful, sunken eye which was fixed on his own, on the descending sun. Soldier, that sun which was setting on us is such full glory is now smiling on my own sweet home, casting its slanting beams upon the daisy-spangled meadow where my little ones are at play, on the rich green wheat fields and many-colored orchards, and shining on the peaceful village churchyard where my bones may never be laid. How those dear hearts at home are thinking of us now, how many prayers are daily offered for our safety, but the bright eyes may soon be bathed in tears, the fond hearts be wrung with sorrow. O God, my God, thou knowest that I can face death, face it firmly, fearlessly, but my soul quails at the thought of what others will suffer. Who will comfort my broken-hearted mother? Spirit, he who hath said, leave thy fatherless children, I will preserve them alive, and let thy widows trust in me. Soldier, there is a strong comfort in resting in his promises, committing all to his care. It is an hour like this that we prove the support and solace of religion, when we look on the sinking sun with more than a doubt that we shall ever behold it rise again, when there is none but of the excitement of conflict, the eager rush to the attack, the hope of triumph, the certainty of honor, to stir up all the natural ardor which glows in the breast of a man, but all the probability of death coming in confusion at night attack, then is the hour in which we cling to the thought of protecting Father as the guiding Savior, as a drowning man clings to the one plank which supports him in a wild and stormy sea. Spirit, and you can hold fast this confidence in your God? soldier, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Spirit, you can resign yourself into his hand for life or for death. Soldier, whether we live to the Lord, and whether we die to the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. Spirit, yes, it matters little to the Christian whether the snows of the age on his head, or that he descends quietly into the waters of death, accompanied to the brink by loved friends, or in his prime clears the deep, narrow stream with one bound, exchanging in an instant the desperate struggle, confused noises, and garments rolled in blood for the sunken alleluia and changeless peace of the skies. The darker the conflict, the brighter the transition. The soldier, the bullet or steel bears the message of God, and he sends no message to his servants that bears not the seal of love. Spirit, faith sees that love in all things. Should this night indeed be your last, you can say, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me in that day. Soldier, for I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep which I have committed unto him against that day. I both lay me down to sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of the death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Waking or sleeping, dying or living or dying, keep me, my God, for I am thine. Darkness shrouded the earth, and heavy eyelids closed, and on that hard, rude couch slumber, calm and peaceful, as an infant's, fell on the weary man. Oh, that's a touching story. It almost brings a tear to your eye, doesn't it? It does to mine, as I think about so many Christians who fought to try to defend their country against an aggressing invader like the Lincolnite Army and General Sherman and so forth. And in losing that, they gained everything because they gained their salvation in short order. But how sad it is for those of us who remain, who have to live under the tyranny of the state which has encroached, and God only knows why he chose to allow them to win that conflict, but there may be a day again in which God will be pleased to turn the tide, and once again we will be able to live in freedom and liberty in this land. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, now late for a break, and we'll be back shortly.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9:00 a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There, you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Since we're talking about George Bush's nomination of this conservative justice, Sam Alito from Pennsylvania or from Philadelphia. Yes, hard to believe something good would come out of that area. But at any rate, since we're reading about it, Robin, who writes on the Christian Libertarian email list, sent off a link to a guy named Don Feeders, F-E-D-E-R, Feeders, column, which illustrates the hypocrisy and intellectual poverty of Republican conservatism. First, he declares, look, I voted for Bush twice and wrote countless columns supporting him over Al Gore and John Kerry. Given the alternatives in the last two presidential elections, I'd vote for him again. Then he complains, over the past 5.5 years, the movement has swallowed so much from this administration that the public could be forgiven for thinking conservatives have turned into auxiliary of the Republican National Committee. Forgiven for believing the truth? The public, he says, that is non-Bolsheviks or Bushoviks, recognize Feeder and his kind for what they are. Factionalists whose only consistent governing principle is securing and increasing the power of the Republican politicians at the expense of the Democratic Party rivals. Deny it though he will, in taking up the golden wig and pom-poms for Bush, Don reveals himself as a blonde cheerleader. Feeder even stoops to praising Dubia's character, or W's characters, heedless of the ridiculous self-contradiction his demands. I believe the president is a decent man who's sincere in his faith. Mr. Bush lied to us repeatedly through two presidential campaigns when he promised to appoint justices like Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia to the nation's high court. A decent, sincere, faithful liar? Feeder cannot believe this nonsense, as would any Democrat hack. He praises the dear leader just enough to remain in good graces of his party and to win a hearing for his five guidelines, which are: never assume the president has our interests in hearts, remind Bush who has elected him to the presidency twice, and third, present the president with copies of the 2000 and 2004 Republican national platforms, suggest that he study them closely. Four, within the next Supreme Court nomination, take nothing for granted. Insist, fifthly, that the president finally keep his campaign pledge and nominate a Thomas or a Scalia, not someone he thinks is a Thomas or Scalia, not someone he tells us is a Thomas or Scalia, but someone we immediately recognize as an intellectual clone of those distinguished jurists. Hello, Janice Rogers Brown. Anyway, Robin says, it seems to me that Feder's real purpose is to keep conservatives loyal to the GOP by promoting the illusion of party reform. He'll probably succeed. Not because he makes such sense, but because the Democrats make no sense at all. Well, that's certainly the case. And Don Feeder is everything that this guy, obviously, this is everything that Robin has said. But we want to say this for George Bush this morning. He may have done it. He may have nominated somebody good. We'd like to find out more about him. If you know any more about this guy, who's been nominated. Boy, I'm having trouble. A little slurring this morning. Excuse me. Sam Alito. We'd like to know more about him. Give us a call here at the show, 864-244-8177, 864-244-9904. That's the preferred line, actually. Or 864-201-6955. And we'll discuss it further. In the meantime, our research staff has sent up an article saying, this is a good historical outline, Dr. Coben, of the conservative movement. Some of the conclusions and statements may irritate you or us, but it's interesting, useful article. Okay, so we're about to be irritated, but this is the origins of the American conservative movement. The origins of the American conservative movement. Now, this is a long article, so we're not going to read through it, but the dutiful Tyranny Response Network research staff has seen fit to include some highlights here that we can read from this article by Lee Edwards, PhD, Heritage Lecture number 811, The Origins of the Modern Conservative Movement. And he's talking about his trip to mainland China at the beginning, and then moves into talking about Russell Kirk and the Conservative Mind, which was a great book to read if you want to understand about conservatism. And I hope if you haven't read The Conservative Mind by the late Russell Kirk, I hope you will do so. Anyway, here's what he says, and down a little ways in the article. He says, Chairman Mao's aphorism, in fact, denies the reality that lasting political power grows not out of a gun, but out of an idea. The central idea of the conservative mind, upon which American conservatism is essentially based, is ordered liberty. It is a blending of the sometimes contending requirements of the community and the individual, of individual freedom and individual responsibility, of limited government and unlimited markets. That's what true conservatism is, according to the Heritage Lecture. Conservatives declared that communism was evil and had to be defeated, not just contained, and they said that the federal government had grown dangerously large and had to be rolled back, not just managed more efficiently. Down a little further, he says, President Eisenhower was offering a dime store New Deal instead of the real New Deal. And he continues on later now, talks about the new right, or the neoconservatives, and he says, the new right and the neoconservatives were not a natural alliance. The new right was deeply suspicious of government, while the neoconservatives embraced it. And persuaded most conservatives to, or Reagan had persuaded most conservatives to sublimate their differences to the greater good. And Newt Gingrich, on his contract with America, tried to do the same thing and failed. But at any rate, this brings up some interesting points of discussion. Were the founding fathers conservatives? Did they want a blend of markets with some government ordering of society? Or were they content to have so-called unlimited free markets? Well, this is a good question for debate. In my view, my humble opinion, all of them on the anti-federalist side were what we call classical liberals. They're not liberals in the modern sense, but classical liberals, the historic sense, before the word was hijacked by Woodrow Wilson and others in the early part of the 20th century and became a pro-union, pro-socialist kind of group. So they were classical liberals, and really the people who have inherited the classical liberalism today is clearly the Libertarian Party. They want the unlimited free markets, very little or no government involvement into the economy. Now, conservatives, traditional conservatives, I think, might have been people like Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, perhaps. I'm not even sure you'd go, well, it could be John Jay. It wasn't Madison entirely. But there were a few of the founders, as far as I can tell, who might have fallen into the category of true conservative. Now, I'm cautious when I say that, because Alexander Hamilton was also the father of the neocons, which is not a true conservative. But I think in his day, he probably still would have barely squeaked into the conservative movement. Conservatives do see a role in the state of promoting some kind of industry and commerce, and so they would be in favor of some regulation or some aid to business through tariffs, through maybe a central bank even like Hamilton wanted. And so historically, true conservatives in this country have been at odds with the classical liberals. And I think that the conservative thought, there's some point to which what he's saying here, and it just highlights to me why I am not a conservative in this sense. I am a conservative in terms of my social values. I am a conservative in terms of the way I live. But in terms of political structure, I do not want the state enforcing anything on anyone. I don't want it regulating the economy. I don't want any kind of state involvement. Why? Because I don't think that I think things are perfect the way they are under markets. I just think that states cannot make them better. States can only make things worse. So as bad as things are now, just wait and see how bad it gets under a state. Well, actually, how bad it is under the current state. It would be much better, as imperfect as it would be, without having a state at all and having completely free markets. And so that's why I prefer to be a pro-life libertarian. I am a pro-life libertarian rather than a conservative. Now, the Constitution Party does seem to carry along the lines of the true conservative movement. I don't think they've gone into the errors at all of Alexander Hamilton. They've rejected the Federal Reserve System, and so they would be playing along a more Burkean line of things. But even among their ranks, they'll find people who believe that the state needs to be called in because the free market fails and the state somehow needs to correct problems. You see some of this in the Constitution. That's why the post office is there, encoded in the Constitution itself. That's why we can't have a privatized mail delivery service. Because there was the conservative influence and those people that wanted to bring the state in and have it involved with regulating the economy, at least to some extent. Anyway, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this 31st day of October, 2005. Glad you've joined us today. Interesting discussion, especially about Samuel Alito, the new Bush nominee for the Supreme Court. But before we get on to more topics of interest, we want to hear about what the weather is for us today. So here it is.
Okay, right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 45 degrees, downtown 43 degrees, Anderson 37, Clemson 43. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s, light and variable winds, becoming south around 5 miles per hour this afternoon. And here's a quote by Barry Goldwater, "A government big enough to give you all you want is big enough to take it all away."
And some conservatives are worrying about bye-bye Latin America when President Bush leaves Washington for the December 2005 Heads of States of the Americas Conference in Buenos Aires, Argentina. He will find himself in polite but not very friendly political environment. This is from the G2 Bulletin. Not only will the U.S. president have to face President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, his most outspoken antagonist, but he also have to rub shoulders with several other heads of state representing the left-of-center political position. This is not true. It's not left-of-center. Hugo Chavez is a communist, okay, and the other guys down there, like the ones in Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil, are at least left of center, but let's talk about way left of center. They're almost communists in their political philosophy. So people are worried that George Bush apparently might end up losing Latin America. Well, you know what? First of all, there's not a whole lot of difference, frankly, folks, between the policies that George Bush is allowing to go on and communism. Now, you're thinking, that's crazy. How can you say such a thing? Well, look, folks, communism at its base has the idea of government or state control of enterprise, state promotion of enterprise, state redistribution of wealth, and various sanctions on behavior and controls of human behavior. That's what George Bush is about. He's not about liberty, people. He's about some degree of welfarism. And that's probably the better word to use to describe. He's a welfarist. He likes the status quo of the welfare state, which is not effectively that much different, at least at bottom, than communism is itself. So yeah, he's far better than a totalitarian dictator like Stalin would be. I think that's pretty easy to say, clear. But he's still on the same road. He's still holding those same kinds of principles that other communists have held throughout history. So I'm not sure that he's going to be so troubled down there in Buenos Aires. He might be politely in better company maybe than a lot of people want to say or want to admit. George Bush is closer to some of these people than he is certainly to true conservatives. Now, he threw everybody a bone apparently today by nominating this other guy, Samuel Alito. Apparently is a true conservative jurist in the tradition of Antonin Scalia. We'll see if he gets confirmed. But at any rate, I think it seems like George Bush just caved into the political pressure and threw a people on the right a bone. Here's Marcus Epstein writing a book, or who's reviewing a book, called Bill Buckley, Pied Piper of the Establishment. 50 years ago, conservatism meant opposition to big government and its manifestations and belief. And a belief in a non-interventionist foreign policy. Today, most people associate it with preserving the legacy of Harry Truman, Martin Luther King Jr., and Hubert Humphrey, while supporting American cultural, economic, and political hegemony across the globe. What conservatism means today is at odds with what it used to stand for. What's the reason? John Birch Society President John F. McManus puts the blame squarely on William F. Buckley in his excellent new book, William F. Buckley, Pied Piper of the Establishment. McManus tells the story of a talented and intelligent man born into privilege. His father, James Buckley, was exemplar of the old right, a staunch opponent of Roosevelt's New Deal and drive towards war. Buckley followed his father's footsteps and was outspoken in his politics, but somewhere he went astray. McManus seems to blame his shift on his left-wing professor, Wilmore Kendall, and his membership in the Skull and Bones Club, but neither of these explanations seems to give a concrete answer. We're still wondering if this new Supreme Court appointee who went to Yale Law School is also a member of Skull and Bones. I think you have to be an undergrad to get into Skull and Bones. He went to Princeton as an undergrad, so maybe he's not Skull and Bones, but if you know, we'd be interested in hearing about it. Remember, our phone numbers are 244-9904 or 244-8177 in the 864 area code. Okay, in 1952, Buckley wrote a very telling article for the Catholic Weekly, The Common Weal, where he stated, "We have to accept big government for the duration, for neither an offensive nor defensive war can be waged, given our present government skills, except through the instrument of a totalitarian bureaucracy within our shores. And if they deem Soviet power a menace to our freedom, as I happen to, they will have to support large armies and air forces, atomic energy, central intelligence, war production boards, and the attendant of centralization of power in Washington, even with Truman at the reins of it all." McManus sees this article as the root of Buckley's ideology, fighting communism with internationalism and socialism. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Anyway, this looks like a good review of Buckley, the neocon, and how his neoconservatism has effectively derailed the true conservatives here in America. And, you know, it happened to them second. First, the liberals were derailed under Wilson, and it's taken them now, you know, another 80 or so years to completely derail the conservatives, so that all we have now are in modern liberal and modern conservative terms is much of the same thing. We don't have anyone with the principles of either Edmund Burke or Thomas Jefferson to use representatives from the conservatives or the liberals in the old sense or the classical sense running today. It's not there. I mean, maybe Alan Keyes is, and certainly those in the Libertarian and Constitution parties are, but they are very few and far between. Most of the time we have pragmatic, vote-gathering politicians, vote-seeking politicians, I guess we could say, who are pandering to the, you know, emotive responses of ignorant Americans and just trying to get elected by being shifty and saying whatever's necessary to get into office. They are not truly upholding the virtues of the original party platforms or the original party ideologies, I guess you can call it, of conservatism or of classical liberalism. It's very, very different. So appreciate research staff sending up that note to us. It is indeed an interesting piece. Here's something else that's somewhat interesting, I guess. Chase is rolling out RFID credit cards. That's radio frequency ID credit cards in New York and Philadelphia. Chase is delivering the cards to 2 million customers in the New York metro area and 900,000 customers in the Philadelphia metro area. Stephen Marlin from Information Week reports this is October 27th. J.P. Morgan and Chase & Company said Thursday that it has begun rolling out a contactless credit cards known as Blink. The New York and Philadelphia metropolitan areas to use the Blink cards, customers wave the card near a reader at the checkout line. The reader emits a tone and lights up to signal payment confirmation. Chase is delivering cards which use a radio frequency identification chip to 2 million customers in the New York metropolitan areas and 900,000 customers in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. Then the initial merchants that will accept Blink are 7-Eleven, AMC Theaters, CVS, Duane Reade, Regal Entertainment, and Sony-style stores. So imagine that. You just walk into a store now, and you take your credit card out, and it just blinks. It actually just does a radio frequency to emit the information. Now, that scares some people, especially if you're of the dispensational variety and believe that there will actually be a literal 666 implanted on somebody. This would be of great concern to you, I'm sure. It's not as much as concern to those of us who are do believe that the 666 is a metaphor, not a metaphor, but a symbol of the unholy trinity, which would be the beast from the sea, the beast from the land, and the dragon, or the devil, the state, and false religion. That's the sign of the unholy trinity, whereas the numbers or numerology, I suppose, of the trinity would be the 777, perfect and glorious and everything. And of course, 666 is the number of a man because it's manifested through the works of evil men. But that's just an interpretive difference. There are many Christians who are active and certainly TRN listeners who might hold to the dispensational point of view. So there you have it for today. Your latest new chink in the armor, or your latest new advancement towards the 666 world order, and that is the chip that's implanted into cars. I suppose they're going to be implanted into human beings, too. Just walk around with one in your hand. Can't lose your credit card that way. An open letter to Colonel Bolin, which is from Butler Schaefer. We can't read this now. It's just turned 8:15. You know what? We're going to jump to a break instead. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-9904. 8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And the Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, the Times Examiner features outstanding pro-life conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists, including many of your favorites, Dr. John Coben, Dr. Walter Williams, Dr. Thomas Sowell, and more. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiners at newsstands around Greenville or at their offices located at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. It's a full-year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. Call 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576 to get a subscription today. If you want to place an ad in the Times Examiner, you can do so by calling David at 864-859-6817. That's 864-859-6817. Ask for David by name, and you'll get your on the subscription list. Also, and that information, by the way, is available on the related media tab here at tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net. A little further down on the related media tab, you'll find the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition. We hope you'll go down there to that section of the webpage and click on that link. Take 30 seconds out of your morning to sign the Fundamental Rights Petition and protect your private property. Tell the South Carolina legislature that we believe that rights are natural, God-given things, fundamental rights, and certainly not the creature of the state or granted by the state and therefore can be taken away by the state at their whim or wishes. And so, at any rate, take a shot at that if you can. Support your private property by signing the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition. And one more thing, finally, before we go on to some stories. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they're regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic, and willing to act on that concern. excuse me. Our business meeting is 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Malden Road between the old stadium and Lawrence Road. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us with a Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month It's at Cafe Underground, just off of Main Street downtown. And in Spartanburg, you can meet for the Liberty Aplenty meeting at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. It takes place on the first Tuesday of the month, and that will be tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m., the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. Hope you can make it out to Spartanburg's Liberty Aplenty meeting. They would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Yes, indeed. The Tyranny Response Network is your place to help you think differently. Think better. Think in an alternative framework, because we don't just give you the neocon blather here. You're getting something of the Christian worldview and the vision of the founders, the vision of those great men who started this country, as well as those great men who fought to try to preserve the South when they were aggressed by the North. Yes, we do believe that Southern secession is a good idea. People were shocked to hear me say that. Dr. Coben, are you in favor of secession? Absolutely. Anytime. I wish Greenville County could secede from South Carolina and the rest of the Union as far as that goes, but I would be happy to have all of South Carolina secede from the Union, as well as all of North Carolina, Virginia, Georgia, Tennessee. All the rest of them would want to come along with us and leave the Northeast and the upper Midwest and the Michigan, Chicago, those areas. Leave them to do what they want to. Just let us go and be at peace and actually have a chance on this continent of restoring the liberty of the founding fathers. So I am in favor of it. Well, Rippin' Richie apparently has not updated our calendar yet. Hopefully he will do so soon. Rippin' Richie, trying to get, of course he's a volunteer and does an outstanding job for us, but doesn't mean he has it up 2 days in advance or anything like that. That's a little nudge for Richie if he happens to be listening. But anyway, hopefully the calendar will be up so you'll be able to check out the events going on in the coming week here. Besides the Liberty Aplenty meeting tomorrow night, there will be other meetings happening. For instance, the Carolina Patriots will be meeting this Saturday at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road across from Greenville Mall. That's a meeting you definitely want to attend if you want to learn more about freedom and have some interest in the whole issue of taxation and the IRS. So tyrannyresponse.com, your one-stop shop to be able to find out about what's going on in the upstate in terms of political meetings. All right, here we started this open letter from to Colonel Boylan by Butler Schaefer. This is posted on lewrockwell.com. We're not going to read the whole letter, but I thought I might read a couple of points out of it. The media informed me that you have sent an email to news reporters asking them to not treat the 2,000th American serviceman killed in Iraq as a milestone. You reportedly asked journalists to think about the effects on the families and those serving in Iraq. You added that 2,000 figure was an artificial mark on the will set by individuals or groups with specific agendas and ulterior motives. You then echoed the party line about these men and women dying to ensure freedom for people who have not known freedom for over two generations. You concluded with the plea to celebrate the daily milestones of the war and to look for to the future of a free and democratic Iraq. I don't know that there's ever been an appropriate moment for a spokesman of the war system to lecture others on ethical matters. Every war is an abomination to life, and those who choose to participate in the systematic slaughter of men, women, and children in order to advance the interest of the politically ambitious have sufficient cause for soul-searching on their own. But to paraphrase Shakespeare, methinks you doth protest too much when you chastise the media for choosing to report truthful matters concerning a war that has been built upon nothing but a pyramid of lies, deceit, forgeries, and other forms of what the state's public relation boosters refer to as disinformation. It has long been said that the first casualty of any war is truth. Your statement ranks right alongside the government's current practice of not allowing the flag-draped coffins of dead soldiers to be seen. The real casualties must not be known to the public. I suspect you are a career military person, as such your life has been lived in a socialistic environment with many of the costs others of us have to incur in life are borne by the state. Housing, food, medical and dental care, online-based retailing schools and other services whose costs civilians must incur in the marketplace are, for the most part, provided by you, by the state. Perhaps these experiences have made you less sensitive to the fact that life is not a cost-free experience. If one is to live a responsible life, he or she must be prepared to incur all of the costs associated with the pursuit of one's interest and not to impose such costs on others. War is the very essence of irresponsible behavior, for it always is conducted against persons who, apart from the fortuities of geography, have no interest in the contrived disputes by which competing political systems manipulate and control people. And he goes on to rip Bush and Cheney for a good reason. He says, at the end of the letter, if you're truly concerned about the effects on soldiers and their families of reporting these costs of war, you might wish to consider an alternative course of action. I will admit to having a specific agenda and an ulterior motive in opposing the war system. My purposes are to help us discover the thinking and social systems under which we can live productively, peacefully, and freely with one another. If you share these sentiments and care to end the death and suffering now being endured by Iraqis and Americans alike, then come home and bring your fellow Americans with you. Put your creative talents and skills to work in the marketplace, helping to produce the values that sustain life rather than continuing in the service of the slaughter and devastation practiced by the state. I appreciate Butler Schaefer's idea there and his thinking. He's absolutely right in my estimation. War is a terrible thing. It's not something we support here. Anybody with a Christian worldview should support. And it's unfortunate that so many American Christians, you think of local broadcasters, local people who write in papers that claim to be conservatives or Republicans or whatnot, support war. War is a dreadful thing. It's a terrible thing. It's the result of sin. Now, I'm not saying we should never fight a war. I'm saying, Lord, that we should not be those who aggress other people. And this is what we've done in Iraq. This is what the American state has done. Now, if someone invades us and we're attacked, as the Lincolnites did when they invaded the South, then yes, we should have an army and we should have a war to attack back. We should use guerrilla warfare, if necessary, to defend ourselves against the aggressors. No problem with a defensive war from this microphone. But when it comes down to us just wanting to build the empire, pursue our goals around the world by attacking people that would do nothing to us, I have a real problem with that, and I think the Christian worldview cannot stand such a thing, even though modern-day Christians believe that it's just wonderful. In fact, even in our own church, they salute Christians, members from the church and others, who are over in Iraq. Now, we can be supportive of soldiers and their duties, but how can we be supportive of anyone going to aggress other people that we have no business aggressing, that have done nothing to us? This is a sham. This is awful. It should not be something praised and applauded in the church. Just to announce them from the pulpit before thousands of people and say, look, all our servicemen, please stand up for your service, dutiful service in Iraq. And, there's the flag there and the front, sanctuary, another bit of nationalism in the church, a little idol up there, a little mixing of politics or the state with religion. All these people stand up, many of them in uniform, to get a rousing applause from everybody and special prayers for them and their duty as aggressors. It's just wrong. I mean, this is, I know it's not just my church. I know it's most churches out there do this kind of stuff, but it is appalling. It's a blight on our Christian religion that we would honor any kind of aggression. It might as well just have people stand up who are sinning in every other way and say, well, all adulterers stand up. Everybody, please stand up who's not loved his wife this week very well. Yes, we want to applaud you. No, it's ridiculous. But the problem is, folks, they don't recognize it as sin. Christians today look at aggression as being a good thing. As long as the Republican Party's doing it and George Bush is leading it, it's okay. But folks, this is wrong. This is sad. This is not the Christian worldview. It's not something that we should be standing for, and we should be instead opposing them and letting them know that they're wrong for this kind of activity. It's not in the benefit of the church to do this kind of stuff, and it does not glorify God when we exalt aggression and things that are opposed to His word in the church sanctuary. Why do people have a flag in the church? Well, probably just dumb tradition, but what does the state have to do with the church? Well, it probably has a lot to do with it nowadays, but it shouldn't have anything to do with it. The state shouldn't have anything to do with marriage, shouldn't have anything to do with the church, shouldn't have anything to do with you getting a tax-exempt status. The church is a separate entity and certainly should not have any alliance or connection, strong nexus with the state. And it's the epitome of nationalism to have a state flag or American flag in the front of the sanctuary. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've reached the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad that you joined us this morning, helping you think a little bit better, a little bit deeper than you usually would here on this 31st day of October, 2005. And let's have a look at the weather.
Right now, in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 43 degrees. Downtown is 45 degrees. Anderson, 43 degrees. Clemson, 46. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-70s, light and variable winds becoming south around 5 miles per hour this afternoon. And here's a quote by Robert Heinlein. Love your country, but never trust your government.
Amen. Okay, well, we have the research staff working overtime the last couple days, just filling up the Tyranny Response Unit's mailbox with all sorts of stuff. And here's a bunch of stuff about guns. We like guns here, by the way. Violent crime without gun registration, according to the NRA, and gun owner licensing, the nation's violent crime rate has decreased every year. since 1991 and is now at a 27-year low. Also, deaths due to firearm accidents have been decreasing substantially without gun registration and gun owner licensing, while those due to motor vehicle accidents have not decreased despite vehicle registration and driver licensing. So, no gun registration has allowed violent crime to decrease because people carry around guns. Carrying around a gun is not such a bad idea. Try it sometime. You might like it. It certainly is a comforting feeling. Here's targeting guns. This is another post on using guns for defensive purposes. Each year, the United States guns are used 3 to 5 times as often for defensive purposes as for criminal purposes. And that's targeting guns and their control by Gary Kleck, Adeline DeGruyter in 1997. So each year in the United States, guns are used 3 to 5 times as often for defensive purposes as they are for criminal purposes. Interesting quotation there. Here's another one. Brady Law's effect is discounted. The Brady Law's effect is discounted in the by this guy Gugliotta in the Washington Post staff writer. He says, and this is actually a few years ago now, The provocative new study published yesterday concludes that the 1994 Brady Law restricting handgun purchases had no effect on firearm homicide and suicide rates. No effect. Okay. The 1994 data showed no difference in the overall rate of decline between the two sets of states. Our analysis provided no evidence that the implementation of the Brady Act is associated with a reduction in homicide rates. Researchers generally attribute the rise to the crack epidemic in the nation's inner cities and the gun violence that accompanied it. So that's what it was all about. Wasn't it had to do with good people owning handguns. Had to do with crack addicts doing so. You wouldn't have crack addicts like that in meth labs and all this other stuff if there wasn't any preposterous war on drugs going on, by the way. But that's another issue. Yale University researcher John Locke concluded in his book, More Guns, Less Crime, that the Brady Law is not a factor in reducing gun crime. In my research, the four most effective things are arrest rates, conviction rates, and prison sentences, and the death penalty. If the Brady Law was affected by some measure, you would expect to see gun crime drop much more than the same crime, type of crime where gun was not used. Yet crime is down in most categories with or without guns. Adjusting for the overall drop in crime and not finding measurable differences indicates that the Brady Law's effectiveness is minimal, if any. So we need to support guns. Forget about gun control. We just need guns. Lots of guns. Everybody needs guns. Why do we have guns, folks? People are shocked. We're shocked at my comments at Christian Exodus some time ago about the ultimate check. The ultimate check in the Second Amendment. The reason you have guns and you have a Second Amendment is it's our ultimate way to check the state when it becomes tyrannical, when it becomes to destroy human rights and take away our freedoms. You pull out your guns and you shoot people. That's what it comes down to. And yeah, they're people who are in the government, who are the state agents. Who else would you shoot? You're not going to be shooting your neighbors. You're going to shoot people who want to take away your liberties. That's the vision of the founding fathers. Now, am I looking forward to that? No. Do we think we'll die if that happens? Yes. We have to realize that the founding fathers thought the same thing. If we truly want liberty, and we have to ultimately take it to that final stage. If that's what the Second Amendment is all about, we're willing to stand up for the Constitution, then you have to be willing to die for liberty. Give me liberty or give me death. That's what Patrick Henry said. So is it worth fighting for freedom, or do you like your life on the plantation? You like being a slave, or are you willing to fight for freedom? The founders are willing to fight for it. The Southerners who were willing to fight for it against the Lincolnite invaders. But are you? Ask yourself the question. Oh, but that's not a Christian. Christians would never fight. Yes, you don't know anything about history if you say that. Who do you think fought in either of those wars? Do you think Stonewall Jackson was a pagan? How about Robert E. Lee? Was he a pagan? How about just pick them. People in the American Revolution that came out of the First Great Awakening. These people were serious Christians. Their Christianity was far deeper and far more sincere than the Christianity we have today. Don't start giving me some nonsense about, the Tories were right, and, we need to be peaceful people. We can't be attacking the state. No. That was a past, bygone thing. We could never support that sort of thing today. Ignorance is not bliss. If you continue on the path of letting the state encroach into every area of life and destroy and ruin your liberty and refuse to even entertain the thought of resisting the state, then you're living in sin as far as I'm concerned. That's right. I just don't see it as a plausible Christian perspective. Although the divine right perspective, I know there are people who are Christians who hold to it. In fact, most Christians today are divine right of kings advocates. We'll talk about that some other time, but it's a sad state of affairs when that becomes the hallmark, that something that epitomizes the evangelical movement. It's a sad state of affairs. Okay, here's another article from the research staff. Patrick J. Buchanan released Sunday, October 23rd, 2005, and thereafter the greatest scandal. While President Bush and his war cabinet bear full moral responsibility for Iraq, they could not have taken us into war without the complicity of the adversary press and loyal opposition. Today, this town is salivating over the prospect that Karl Rove and Scooter Libby will be indicted for outing Joe Wilson's wife. Outing? Offing. Outing Joe Wilson's wife as a CIA operative. 30 months ago, many of those anxious to see the White House brought down were hauling its water. Consider the role played by our newspaper of record, the New York Times. The stampedus into the war of neoconservatives have been plotting for a decade. Douglas Faith, the Pentagon's number 3, set up as an office of special plans. Its role, cherry-pick the intel that Saddam was acquiring weapons of mass destruction and hell-bent on using them on the United States, then stovepiped the hot stuff to the White House Iraq group, that's the WIG, W-H-I-G, and ignore the contradictory evidence. A primary source in the hot intel about poison gas vans and nuclear bomb programs was tight-knit exile group led by Ahmed Kalabi, head of the Iraq National Congress and the neocon Pentagon favorite to lead the new Iraq. So here is this part of the sordid tale of what's really going on, the great scandal from the so-called Whigs, modern Whigs that Buchanan points out. Yes, indeed, it was all a plot, well known. It is very interesting, as I was hearing on the radio the other day, that something like the Patriot Act, which is over a 1,000-page document, was in the hands of every congressman 48 hours after the attack. How in the world would they have been able to type up a 1,000-page document, print it, bind it, and distribute it in 48 hours? I don't believe it. The thing was prepared beforehand. I'm more and more convinced that there was something else going on there, an inside work or whatever at the 9/11 bombings, or, you know, the catastrophe there. There was something else going on, folks. It's just too bizarre that some of these things could be coincidence. And here with the Iraq War, I have no reason to believe that Bush had not been planning, even during the 90s, for the takeout of Saddam Hussein to settle a grudge or whatever other reasons that this, you know, state empire leaders is using to attack Iraq. It is not for the stated purpose of removing weapons of mass destruction because Iraq was ever a threat to America. Just a bunch of nonsense. The American people are justifiably outraged, said Phyllis Schlafly. The American people are justifiably outraged by Phyllis Schlafly. Coming crack up of conservatives? No way, she says. Phyllis Schlafly. Howard Fryman and Newsweek looked into his crystal ball and proclaimed the coming crack up of the conservative movement, but, to quote Mark Twain, the report of its death is greatly exaggerated. Fryman methodically ticks off what he thinks are the dying agonies of conservatism's constituent parts. The corporate CEOs, whose religion is faith and management, are mortally embarrassed by the Bush administration's incompetence in handling Katrina. The old right is angry about the Bush administration's failure to do anything about the invasion of illegal aliens. The neocons, who want more troops in Iraq, not fewer, more spending on war, not less, and a more passion for empire, not talk of timetables for withdrawal, are despondent about Bush's failure to fulfill their neo-Wilsonian dreams of forcing democracy on the Middle East. The old-fashioned fiscal conservatives who cherish smaller government are in open revolt about Bush's gigantic spending binges. Bush did not stick with the supply siders who believe that cuts in taxes are the basis of a sound economy, but they already worrying that Bush 2 will repeat Bush 1's memorable tax betrayal and allow the reductions to expire. And so Schlafly is concerned, obviously, and she should be. Skipping down a little further in her article, she says, the American people are justifiably outraged by such recent federal decisions banning the Pledge of Allegiance from public schools. Well, I'm happy that... Who cares about the public school, Phyllis? Give me a break. Come on, grow up. You're older woman. Now you should realize what the pagan seminary is all about. Let them have their Pledge of Allegiance. Let them, you know, show them to be what they truly are. But anyway, let me go on. We're not going to digress into government school talk today. Banning the Boy Scouts from holding their popular jamboree on the government property, banning the marriage amendment by adopting a 70% of Nebraskans, adopted by 70% of Nebraskans, banning a Ten Commandments monument in a Kentucky courthouse, ruling a video game showing that teens how to kill policemen enjoy the same First Amendment protection as the best of literature, overturning the ban on partial birth abortion, and approving the taking of property for purposes other than public use. The American people now recognize that we face a battle between self-government by our elected representatives versus rule by unelected judges. We're not going to submit to judicial tyranny. Oh, really? Does that mean you're ready to fight, Phyllis? Are you really going to pick up the gun and shoot? Or are you just going to keep talking and whining and letting them take you down the road of tyranny? That's what you've done for all these years. I'm not that impressed with your track record on that regard. You and the other conservatives have just fallen in line with George Bush and the Republican Party and complained a bit here and there, but I've done nothing as we've slid away from liberty. So anyway, I'm not it's not worth a whole lot of time to read her kind of blather here. It's just she's not a neocon, okay? I don't believe Phyllis Schlafly is a neocon, but she's like Farah, you know, she's out there contributing to the problem, not contributing to the solution, because she whines. She complains, but when it comes down to actually fighting about it, willing to take up arms if necessary, she's not willing to do that. No. We got a Republican form. Let's just keep working within the system. She's not willing to call the public school what it is. either and bail out of that. No, she's full of neocon nonsense, and it's affecting her, even though she's not a neocon. Not yet, anyway. Not as far as I know. Maybe somebody correct me on that if I'm wrong. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview, the final segment for October 31st, 2005. Just trying to go through some of the mailbox clutter. Not clutter. The mailbox has been full from the Tyranny Response Network researchers working over on overdrive here. Senate Bill 397, federal bill that passed. Is a victory or failure? Jennifer Freeman wonders. Well, it grants legal immunity to firearms dealers, which is good, in the event of wrongful misuse of their products by a third party. That's good. But it's also full of all sorts of other restrictions on gun rights. And so, it's hard to say whether it was a true victory for us to get this thing through, because really all the amendments on it to make it less than that. It's a sad state of affair. So anyway, what's going on in Washington. Here's a few other quotes and other pieces of information from our researchers. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and Brazilians vote in favor of keeping access to handguns won't make them any more secure. And Brazilians voted 64% to 36% in a referendum yesterday to reject a proposed ban on retail sale of handguns and ammunition, the National Elections Authority said on its website. That's good. Because Brazil is a dangerous country, and it's not going to get safer by banning handguns, because criminals will still have them, obviously. Opponents of the measure, including framers, are farmers and some lawmakers with police and military experience, said the ban would leave law-abiding citizens without firearms to defend themselves, while stimulating a black market where criminals would get their guns. The vote showed Brazilians reaffirming their constitutional right of self-defense. Forjas Torres, the country's largest gun maker, said in a statement on its website. So yes, we'll still get Tauruses in Brazil as well as in other places in the world. Not a bad little gun, the Taurus. Kind of a knockoff of the Beretta, isn't it? I think that's right. We are approaching, who's saying this? I haven't got anybody who sold. Oh, here it is. Ayn Rand. Okay.
We are fast approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion, the stage in which the government is free to do anything it pleases, while its citizens may not act only by permission, which is a stage of the darkest periods of human history, the stage of rule by brute force, Ayn Rand, the nature of government. And we agree with her. That's a, and on that particular point. Republicans talking like Democrats. This is from the Washington Times. And on October 25th, 2005, Republicans talking like Democrats. House Republicans worried about political fallout from the high profit figures that oil companies are expected to release later this week will demand that companies pour those profits into referring more oil for the U.S. market in order to lower prices. At a press conference today, Republicans led by House Speaker J. Dennis Hastert will tell the companies to explain why they're making so much money and what they will do to bring down the cost of gasoline. What a bunch of nonsense. Government trying to control these sorts of things. It's just bizarre. All right. Well, let's go on and take a couple other things here, parting things before we end up leaving the show for the day. Freedom Daily. This is the Future of Freedom Foundation, Reform or Repeal by Jacob Hornberger, posted on October 28th. The methodological debate with the libertarian within the libertarian movement involves reform versus repeal. Libertarians are virtually unanimous in their opposition to such socialist welfare state programs as Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and public schooling, but the split occurs in how to confront programs such as these. Should libertarians call for their reform or their repeal? As longtime readers of the Freedom Daily and supporters of the Future of Freedom Foundation know, ever since our inception in 1990, we have steadfastly focused on advocating the repeal, not the reform, of socialistic welfare state programs. There are two reasons for this. First, we remain unconvinced that reform gradually leads to repeal, as many advocates of reform claim. Second, more important, we continue to maintain that it is only repeal, not reform, that is consistent with fundamental moral principles. And I agree wholeheartedly. This is the only way we can go for things. I frequently have people say, "Well, Dr. Coben, you're too hard on people. You know, be a little nicer to them when you're telling them they're in sin. Or don't just blast them. I mean, you're not going to win anybody over that way. Blah blah blah." And they talk about gradually bringing them in and being kind to this, you know, the poor sinners out there and so forth that are holding these wicked views and doing awful things. Look, folks, we all sin, we all have problems, but there's no point in pussyfooting around and saying and being nice to people about it. You need to tell them right up front, you know, Joe, I want to be as kind as possible when I say this, but I just feel like I need to bring it up a little bit to you. You know, you've been out there and you know, committing murder, and that's sin. It's a wrong thing to do, and God's going to judge you for that if you continue in that, and you're going to end up going to hell. You know, that's a fair thing to say. It's not cruel. It's not mean. You're just telling them what God tells you to tell them. The same thing would be true about people who are, you know, addicted to pornography or addicted to adultery or, you know, addicted to stealing from the state by taking Social Security checks or have their kids in the public school system, you know, or the pagan seminaries. Those things are, you know, it's just part of our Christian duty to go and kindly, nicely and straightforwardly tell people that they're doing something that's wrong. Then if they repent, we're not supposed to gloat about it or think, "Oh, well, what I did, I'm better than this person." No, you're supposed to, in fear, go and tell those people about this, knowing that you yourself are made of flesh and blood and might fall into the same sins that they fall into. And the proper response for a Christian who approaches someone else and rebukes them is one of humility. It's not one of fear of man, where you're afraid to go and tell your neighbor that he's doing something wrong. It's not Southern to go in and confront somebody. Folks, this is of the devil. It's wickedness. It's sin to have this kind of attitude. We need to go out and repeal stuff, not reform it. We don't try to be nice and gradually get our way in. We need to stand up for what's right and the truth and principles. And if God is not pleased to allow the principle to stand through the state system and to allow the whole house of cards to fall down and the whole thing to be repealed, then so be it. We've at least done our duty and voted for principle. Don't get caught up into the pragmatism of staying in line with the Republican Party, or the Democrat Party for that matter. You need to get out of it. Stand for principle. And there's only two choices, as far as I can tell, to be principled. You're either a pro-life libertarian like I am, or you're in the Constitution Party. And the differences that separate those two are theological presuppositions and differences that lead to other outworkings. But either way, you're taking a principled approach, and it's the only way you can be right before God is to be supporting one of those two things. So I like Hornberger's article there, and I appreciate him giving us that info this morning.
Well, here we have easily progressed, written by Jenny Johnson. Referendum ethics hits ethics problems. This is a local story here. District facilities easily just for those of you listening on the internet. Easily is a town about 20 miles to the west of Greenville. District facilities issues are heating up as complaints come to light about the possibility of unethical political campaigning on the part of district employees. Easily progressed in receipt of two letters that were sent home via students at the different schools encouraging parents to vote in favor of the referendum on November 8th to increase the sales tax. Impassioned letters urge parents to make a positive influence towards the education of the children of their country, as if more money is going to do it. So what's happening in the corruption here is they're using public money to politicize one particular point of view, namely the public school, and there's been some other internal corruption going on there. So we thought we'd just report a little bit about that stuff going on there. So for those people in the upstate want to keep apprised on the local corruption. Yes, even Greenville, Easley, all these areas up here are prone to corruption, and it's awful, the graft and stuff that goes on in local politics. It's not just at the federal level or the state level. It's right here in our local towns, and it's in your local area as well. Don't think it's only here in the upstate of South Carolina. In fact, if it's, you can imagine what it's like elsewhere if it's as bad as it is here. The dead ends of technicalitarianism. This is by Anthony Gregory. He says, and he's writing on lewrockwell.com, There's a prominent subspecies of libertarian that places much emphasis on the technicalities of the Constitution and statutory law, often at the cost of understanding the true nature of the state and its mechanisms of power. The most pervasive technicalitarian arguments concern the income tax. We learned that the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified, or the tax is only supposed to apply to foreigners or citizens who make money in a foreign exchange, or that the tax is really a corporate tax, or that the web of the IRS regulation serves to obscure the fact that no statute actually mandates that you pay a tax. Refusing to file for income tax, or writing your name in all capital letters, refraining from using zip codes in your outgoing mail, or referring to yourself as a citizen as opposed to a citizen with a lowercase c, is supposed to keep the tax hounds away. They cannot touch you if you know the law. Libertarians certainly have good reasons to know the law, especially the parts of it that will help shield liberty against the government. Furthermore, it's important to understand the real story behind various frauds, hoaxes, and coups in American history when we know a certain certain constitutional amendment, or indeed the entire Constitution, was conjured up by a smoky room filled with special interests and scrupulous politicians. We better recognize that the state does not really have a sacred legitimacy, often spoken of in popular mythology. So he's gonna basically argue with good reason that, look, you're getting the whole thing wrong here. The state is what's evil. If you're trying to look back on technicalities and get something good, find some escape hatch, it's not going to happen, folks. And he's right. The state is our enemy. The Constitution is something we support not because we believe it's perfect, but because it's a whole lot better than the socialism and anti-liberty forces going against us right now. In fact, going back to the Constitution as a historical document is one stronghold we might possibly still be able to cling to in our fight for liberty. Now, I agree that we should go back to the Articles of Confederation or some document like that, where we have total decentralization of power and we don't have the problems that are even posed in the Constitution itself. But let's face it, folks, the Constitution is wonderful, just amazingly wonderful compared to the socialism and tyranny under which we live today. And so while he's right in his article here, I'm going to remind us of that as we go along here, our purpose in what we do. I'm going to read his closing paragraph just as we end the show here. The state is an organization of coercion, monopoly of aggression, falsely legitimized by its own fiat and sanctified by an idolatrous mythology and through lying propaganda. There's no technicality that can curb its intent. Inherent conflict with a natural law and individual liberty. It draws actual blood, bankrupts actual companies, bombs actual cities, and taxes actual wealth. Its soldiers shoot to kill. Its taxmen are equally ruthless. In principle, it's no more bound by the subsection of the tax code than a mobster is bound by his vague promise to protect you. It is for all these reasons the state must be understood and eventually dismantled wherever and whenever possible. Don't get too distracted by the fine print and neglect the big picture. Great way for us to end the show as we think about that today, folks. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad that you did, and we'll look forward to having you back for some more great stuff tomorrow morning on the Tyranny Response Network. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.